This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campolinosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Melbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Lori. A little bit cloudy day, but we could use a little rain, I think. So Lori's now answering the telephone, so I'm left all alone here. Actually, I'm not all alone, folks. I've got a great guest this morning who is going to be, Stephanie Dornan is here with Health Freedom, and I really appreciate you coming up here, Stephanie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Lou, for having me.
Always. Listen, and then I'm also expecting Commander Deacock to call in, too, so that he can participate from his workstation over in Texas, where he runs what we actually need is oil. So Deek, are you on the line right now?
Yes, good morning, Lou.
Hey, how are you doing? Now, did let Stephanie say something. Stephanie, just say hi to Deek real quick.
Hey, Deek, it's nice to hear from you.
Can you hear her?
Hey, Stephanie. Good morning. How are you?
All right. Okay, so we're all communicating here. All right, folks. So the game plan this morning is that Stephanie Dornan is the co-director of Health Freedom Alabama, and what I wanted her to do is to discuss with you and me and Lori and Deek what's going on with Health Freedom and as it pertains to what is going on in the session, okay? The legislative session is going on. They're coming back today after spring break. I mean, why do they have a spring break after 1 week? I mean, okay, so we won't get into that kind of stuff, but the fact of the matter is now they've got to kind of, get down to work and see what's happening. So, and I've mentioned to you all the last couple of weeks that I really wanted to talk about some of the things that was going on in the session. So here's an opportunity for us to hear important things about, what's happening from the standpoint of Health Freedom. Now, why do I pick out Health Freedom? Because it's kind of important that we don't want people to be forced to get the vaccine and wear masks and all the rest of that crap, okay? And believe me, Stephanie Dornan has led the way to try to, preserve health freedom. So we want to talk a little bit about what that really means, and no one is better, informed about it than Stephanie. So we'll do that, and then when that's over, and any time we're talking about this health freedom, I know that Deke has been heavily involved with that at the local level here, where, we challenged the local school board about vaccines and masks and all the rest of that. So, Deke, feel free to jump in here, as you would, as Stephanie's talking about some of these issues. But once Stephanie is finished with hers, then what I want to do is kind of shift to some non-health issues that Deke has a major question about with the PRICE Act. And then shift again back to some of the international issues pertaining to China and what's going on with Ukraine and wrap it up along those lines. So fortunately, we have an hour to do all of this. Oh, Stephanie, yes, you have an hour.
We get an hour?
We have an hour. That's right.
Whoa.
I mean, this is big time here.
Could we start by Stephanie explaining what the organization is?
Absolutely. Well,
go ahead. Lori just stole my show, but that's
okay.
Health Freedom Alabama is a grassroots organization that grew up out of the effort to pass a bill that would prohibit vaccine passports from coming to Alabama. So we formed in August of 2021 and have been working ever since to protect the rights of Alabama citizens to stand up and say no to vaccine mandates and no to vaccine their bodies, their employers, no to mask mandates on their children in schools, and to just protect the rights of our citizens to have bodily autonomy here in our home state.
Well, and I think that Lori, your question is necessary, because I think grassroots movements come and go, but this one has taken off. And the reason it's taken off, partly because of the pandemic and partly because of the craziness that went on with the pandemic, forcing masks, forcing vaccines, vaccines that didn't work, masks that don't prevent any spread of this particular disease, the COVID. So, you know, you have a major credibility with all the things that were coming out of Washington and what this government here in Alabama was doing. So I think it's quite natural that the reaction against all of that is exactly why, you know, Stephanie and her organization have grown in stature and grown in the fear factor that the legislators have when Stephanie calls for an alert, okay? And I think that's an aspect of politics that has to be understood, because these folks don't really understand a whole lot more than being run out of town because they're not doing the right thing. And when you factor in the fact that the Business Council of Alabama and other interest groups control so much, what Stephanie has been able to do in a very short period of time is just outstanding. So let's get right to it, Stephanie.
Thank you, Dr. Liu. You know, people have to understand that the real power behind the movement lies in the hands of the people. You know, when you are speaking to a senator or a legislator, you may think that they have the power, but truly the power lies in the people's ability to mobilize and to take action for something that they care about. So Health Freedom Alabama has thousands of members across the entire state, and we pride ourselves in our ability to make it quick and easy for our members to take action on topics that they care about when it comes to health freedom. Our goal is to make it so that a call to action takes 30 seconds to 2 minutes to complete. And it's as easy as that. We send you a text message. We even tell you what to say. And it's free to become a member. So for your listeners that are interested, you can go to www.healthfreedomalabama.com and register there with your name, your email address, and your telephone number, and become a member of Health Freedom Alabama for free.
healthfreedomalabama.com.
There it is. I'm a member.
You are, Dr. Liu, and we appreciate all.
A proud member, believe me.
We appreciate all of your efforts. Deke is definitely a very active member as well.
I will be now.
Thank you, Lori. We welcome you aboard.
Okay, so let's get down to brass tacks. Okay, what is the first bill that you're interested in and hope that the legislature will pass?
Our biggest bill that we are working on is called the Alabama Health Freedom Act. It's a bill that we had sponsored last year as well. It will be filed in the legislature again this year. Representative Ernie Yarbrough out of Trinity will be the sponsor of that bill, and it has several co-sponsors as well. What this bill does is it stops discrimination based upon your vaccination status. We are seeing all across the state employees who are still faced with testing requirements for COVID. Some employees are required to wear name badges on their shirt or their lapel that indicates if they are vaccinated. Some even have different uniforms. There are employees in the northern part of the state who were even required to eat in the basement away from their peers if they were unvaccinated. There are some indications as well from our members across the state that employers are giving the unvaccinated different health benefits or different employee benefits, and all of that is wrong. We know, especially now with all of the data that is coming out about this vaccine, that there should be no discrimination at all based upon anybody's vaccination status. It's just un-American.
So let's just talk about the possibility that your bill is actually going to be passed. I know that there's always resistance to it. We had other grassroots movements that did not support it and that did not help. And I think it was Senator Elliott who came out with his SB. I forgot the number on it, but his bill basically put the burden of the proof His bill basically said you, the citizen, had to take on, you know, the establishment to fight against getting the vaccine. And it meant that they created a bureaucracy. You had to go to the HR people. And you were kind of on your own. And I know that we all were aghast at something like that, but that's what happened. So do you think, and I know that you don't have a crystal ball, especially no one has a crystal ball with this legislature, but what is your sense of how well this is going to be received this time around?
You know, I'm actually very, very positive about that. There is a large movement happening in the legislature. And if you look at what happened during the elections, we have the highest turnover of House members ever in the history of Alabama. Mm-hmm. And most of those new freshmen ran on freedom and liberty and support people's rights to say no to vaccine mandates and no to mask mandates. And so I would warn those legislators who are going to stand in the way of that type of legislation to promote freedom and liberty in Alabama to watch out, because they need to take heed of some of the races that happened last year and mm-hmm. take notice that, you know, they have some colleagues who are no longer there with them anymore as a direct result of those colleagues' stand on freedom and liberty and these vaccine mandates.
Okay, so the Health Freedom Act is in motion right now. Do you expect it to be brought fairly soon, or how is that working? I think you told me before you're still looking for more co-sponsors. What's the threshold you're looking at before Ernie Yarborough brings it up?
We're looking at having that bill filed this week.
Okay.
So we should be able to prep everybody with that bill number. Right now it just has a name, the Alabama Health Freedom Act. So if vaccine mandates are something that's important to you, then I encourage you to contact your House representative and tell them to vote in favor of the Alabama Health Freedom Act.
Great. Okay. So that takes care of one aspect of what you all are looking at doing as far as your overall agenda. What's next on the list? What can we expect from you all in terms of another bill that will help Alabamians deal with health freedom?
Well, another important bill was actually just filed by Representative Chip Brown over in Mobile. It's HB 186, and what this bill does is it allows parents to opt out of any future mask mandates that's handed down by their child's school. It's very important. Parents should have control over that, and a school board is not the end-all, be-all say over what piece of cloth gets strapped to the face of your child.
Well, I mean, you know, that just goes right back to this whole question of you know, school boards being accountable to the people who actually run the schools, which is our taxpaying money. You know, Deke, do you want to say something about the school board issue down here in terms of the masking question, since you were heavily involved with that one in Baldwin County?
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, for all the posturing that the Baldwin County Board of Education made, and, you know, I think people tend to lose sight of this, and this flows right in with what Stephanie is saying about health freedom and, you know, some of the bills that are coming out, but especially the Alabama Health Freedom Act, is that, you know, there was a broader agenda there. It was, you know, we had to take on masks first because, you know, that was the first form of tyranny that had to be defeated, and we were successful with that, but the board actually kept trying to drag us into, you know, to label us as anti-vaxxers and all that. They wanted to make the mask issue, you know, together with the vaccine issue. And we had to kind of be really firm with them, you know, to address the mask issue separately, and we won on that, right? But, you know, what I would encourage, you know, the listening audience and, you know, our supporters to understand is that those two issues are absolutely tied together. You know, you can call it virtue signaling, but it was also a sign, you know, of not just oppression and tyranny, but to the people, to the oppressors, you know, to government and the big pharma, the folks who were pushing this to, you know, to measure compliance. You know, that was their you know, like if they got a lot of pushback on masking, then they thought that maybe they would have a bigger fight on the mask or on the vaccine mandates and trying to continue with their agenda there, which is vast and terrifying, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing about it is that as far as the masking goes, I mean, the data that you and Stephanie have put together, was clearly indicative that there's no science behind this when you have states, I mean, countries like Sweden not having masking, not closing schools, not vaccinating. I mean, it just seems like, you know, it should have been a no-brainer, but it really wasn't. And actually, what really triggered the board and the school system from saying, well, you know, maybe we aren't going to do masking, was the fact that we that you all put together a political act. This was just genius. You flew airplanes over football games. I think it was like in late August of 21, and basically said no masks. And the next thing you know, the school system said no masks. I mean, so the politics of it really pushed us across the finish line. But that's a sad commentary. I mean, and that's the problem that we're going to face with trying to move the legislature. I mean, it was pretty evident here that the school system really reacted to the airplane, you know, banners. Now, is there something along those lines that will move these legislators, which may or may not happen? But I think Stephanie's point here is that if you look at what happened in the last election, that should be fair warning so that we don't have to run, you know, airplanes over Montgomery, the State House, or do we?
You never know, Dr. Liu.
You never know.
They might need an airplane or two up there, too.
They would just run that airplane right into it. Oh, my God, it's a threat. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Lord, look out.
Yeah, careful there.
crossing the line here. All right, so so we think that the masking issue is something that we want to address, too. All right, so what's next on the agenda after we get the masks taken care of?
Well, Dr. Liu, we need to raise the age of medical majority in the state of Alabama. And what that means is right now, your 14-year-old can walk into a doctor's office and request any treatment or any meeting or procedure they want with their doctor without approval or consent from a parent. And in one particular case, if that child is at least the age of 12 years old and wants treatment for STDs or pregnancy, it's even as low as 12.
I'm shocked.
It's horrible. Yeah. I mean, I've got teenage children, and who has a 14-year-old that they believe can go into a doctor's office and make an appropriate, informed decision about what medical care they need without knowing the history of their family or anything like that? So we need to raise that on up to the age of 18. If you are a parent who is in charge of care and treatment of your child, as we are all legally required to be, you should be the end-all decision maker for that treatment. Your 14-year-old does not have the skills or the mental capacity to make those decisions. So we have a bill that we are proposing that would raise the age of medical majority from as low as 12 years old in Alabama up to 18, or upon completion of a high school diploma or GED, or if that child is married.
Well, let me ask you this, though. The question of the age business, it seems to me that you haven't brought this up before. I know that I think that we talked about this back in August at the Alabama Conservative Coalition meeting, and we certainly were all in favor of it. Do you think that because we've already passed the VCAP bill about doctors not being allowed to provide any kind of transgender, you know, movement towards making that happen, do you think that because we've already laid that predicate there, that something along these lines would be adopted? Because it's clear that what's happening in the schools, regardless of what they say, all of this transgenderism is being promulgated through your counselors. And that creates a situation where a child who is 14 may decide that she or he is going to go and do something about this. Now, they're going to run into a brick wall as far as the doctors go. But our point is, whether it's transgenderism or anything else, there has to be a wall there that says no and protects parents' rights to deal with her children.
Yeah, and the parents, it boils down to the parental rights that we need to protect here in Alabama to say no to that kind of thing. You know, you mentioned the schools. You know, there are health clinics now in Alabama inside of the schools. There are mental health clinics now inside of the schools in Alabama. And the age that the children can just walk out of their classroom and go down to the doctor's office or the clinic inside their school and make their own decisions for their mental health or for their physical health is 14. And it's horrible. It completely bypasses the parents' right to be informed and to consent to things like that.
Yeah, and we're seeing that nationally, with particularly, again, the transgender movement has created, I think, what should be a very logical way for our legislators to think carefully about why this is as important as the VCAP bill was for them to pass last year or the year before. I mean, is that a reasonable assumption, do you think?
You know, parents, it really, Dr. Liu, it just boils down to parents' rights.
Yeah.
We have to protect those. The state cannot come in and say, no, you don't have the right to tell your child who's under the age of the legal capacity to enter into contracts or to do what they're supposed to do to be able to walk into any clinic or
right.
mental health to do the things
yeah, I mean,
they
look,
want to
the,
do.
It's kind
and
of
that boils down to VCAP and things like that as well.
I mean, it is a no-brainer. Kids at 14 can't buy liquor. They can't buy cigarettes.
Or donate blood.
Or donate blood.
Did you know you have to be 16 to donate blood in Alabama?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, but the point is, you know, there are all sorts of restrictions. They can't vote, although the Democrats want 16-year-olds to vote. Okay, so we're all against that. I get that. But here, this is such a no-brainer. So when this bill comes up, do you have some sponsors for whatever we're talking about? Was it Chip Brown going to do this too? Or
we have some discussions going on with other legislators. It really is a no-nonsense, no-brainer type of bill. I mean, this original age of medical majority passed in the 70s when the Democrats were in control, and we believe that it was linked to a lot of abortion legislation that was happening at the same time, and you know, them wanting the 14-year-olds in our state to be able to go seek whatever care they wanted to for their bodies at the time. So with a supermajority of Republicans, quote-unquote conservatives in our state, this should be a no-brainer type of bill for them to really sink their teeth into and stand up and say, hey, parents deserve the right to say yes or no for the treatment of their child until they reach 18.
Okay, well, we'll certainly keep a watch on this one. So what's next on Health Freedom's agenda?
Well, you know, we had an interesting fight kind of pop up into our radar this past week or two. Did you know that in Alabama, you have to be fully vaccinated in order to be a foster or adoptive parent through DHR?
I had heard that. I think you probably told me.
I probably did, Dr. Liu.
You did.
I did. And so it's not just little vaccines. They're the big ones, too. So according to the policy of DHR, it says that a child must be vaccinated who is the biological child of the foster parent that's in the home, according to the CDC schedule. Well, Dr. Liu, what did they just add to the childhood schedule for vaccines?
Could it be the COVID?
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
So now we have a barrier to finding loving homes for children in our state through the foster care system, which is horrible. I know at least 20 families off the top of my head who would sign up to be foster parents if it was not for the vaccine mandates that's imposed upon foster families in this state.
Can we go back a moment, if I may?
Sure.
So a COVID vaccine is it required on the blue card for kids in school, or is it recommended?
In Alabama, it is not required. They actually passed a law last year that says that no further vaccines that were not already on the childhood schedule as of January 1st, 2021 can be added to the school requirements here in Alabama. However, DHR has its own policy and regulation that says they will not license foster care families unless the child is fully vaccinated according to the CDC schedule that is in place.
Okay, so the CDC schedule is a recommendation. Not a requirement.
It is a recommendation, yes. In Alabama, for school entry, you have the ability to claim religious exemption to vaccination as well as medical exemption. But we have situations where now we're preventing foster families from being licensed because of the potential foster parents' religious choices for their biological children in the home.
Well, I mean, the problem with the CDC recommendations, though, is that they almost turn into law because people are afraid to cross them. And I think that that's an aspect of this that we have to deal with. But let's get back to the actual bill. Now, when we were talking about this before we went on the air, there is a bill that's out there, I think, that went to the Senate. So now Senator Orr, who is the sponsor in the Senate for the bill that basically has this vaccine mandate to become a foster parent. So where do you think this is going now at this point?
Well, the bill is actually a really good bill that deals with adoption. And so what they have done is they have reformatted the adoption laws in Alabama. And it's a great bill. It started in the House as HB 101. Representative Ernie Yarbrough brought a floor amendment to make that bill even stronger, which would prohibit DHR from requiring vaccinations of foster families or potential adoptive families. Mm-hmm. So there isn't necessarily anything in the adoption bill to deal with vaccinations, but it's important to bring this situation to light that we have over 5,700 children in foster care right now in the state of Alabama, and there are only 2,370 certified foster homes. Well, that's simple math right there. We need more foster families, and if we're going to have, I mean, it's a travesty to have any type of barrier like this when it comes to discrimination based upon vaccination
status, yeah.
Right, as a barrier to licensing more foster families.
Okay, but Yarbrough's amendment to prevent any kind of vaccine, you know, mandate, that failed.
It did. Unfortunately, it failed 24 to 58, I believe, were the numbers. And we have a roll call vote now on who's standing for freedom and liberty. Our local representative here, Representative Fidler, actually voted in favor with Ernie Yarbrough to remove these barriers for foster families.
How about some of the other locals, though? How did that work? This is kind of an off-the-wall question, but do you have an idea of how Matt Simpson, Francis Hope Jones, Donna Givens, how did they vote?
Unfortunately, Representative Matt Simpson, Representative Francis Hope Jones, and Representative Donna Givens voted the wrong way.
Yeah.
They did. They absolutely voted the wrong way on that.
Okay. So we're expecting something to happen then with the with Senator Orr in the Senate. So
the adoption bill passed out of the House, and it now heads to the Senate. And there's another opportunity to add this very important amendment into that adoption bill when it lands in the Senate. And Senator Orr will be carrying that. So if this is something that's important to you, you want to see more children placed in loving homes instead of residential institutions and open up more foster families in the state, I definitely encourage our listeners to contact Senator Orr's office at 334-261-0758. That's 334-261-0758. And you know, Senator Orr really has a chance right now to become a hero to thousands of children who are left without a family in Alabama. So it's an important amendment that Health Freedom Alabama supports, and we hope the legislators and the senators get it right.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly support you with that.
Thank you.
Did you have an alert go out on that one yet?
We did. Our members got an email alert this morning, and so if you're not a member, you didn't get it, so you should join us up.
Well, you don't have to be a member to call.
You don't. Sure. No, you don't. No.
Okay. So we've looked at that particular. I think it's critically important that we stop this mandate business across the board. Okay, but let's say that you know, it's all working in the right direction. So we'll get up with Senator Orr, and hopefully the amendment that Yarbrough wanted, I guess, will be reinstated by someone in the Senate Hopefully it would be or.
We'll That's see. Our hope, yes.
Okay. All right, so what's next on the health freedom agenda?
Isn't that enough?
No, I want more.
That's a lot.
Dr. Lou, we're busy. We're certainly
busy. You are
busy.
But there is one more I think you want to talk about.
Tell me about it.
Isn't it reproductive questions with marijuana over, you know, not taking marijuana, you know, if you're pregnant?
What? Health Freedom Alabama does not touch the marijuana issue at all. I wouldn't touch that issue with a 200-foot pole.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, but, I mean, here's the thing. A pregnant woman is by law, not supposed to be doing all sorts of things to hurt that fetus. And now, with the explosion of CBD and all the rest of it, you can have CBD gummies and all like that. It seems like the fetus is, you know, particularly vulnerable to these kinds of things to happen. So, I don't know. Is it?
Well, it would be my hope that every mother would make the best decision for themselves and their baby.
And that is hemp, which is legal. Marijuana is not.
Yeah, but it has the same effect, though. One can argue. I mean, that's the argument against this thing. So, but there is a bill along the lines of trying to deal with this.
You'll have to talk to Eagle Forum about that, Dr. Lee.
Okay. I'm treading on thin ice here. Okay. All right. So that does that really take care of health freedom and where we are?
You know, Casey Cavender, my co-director, and I are daily working on these bills and daily working with our members to protect our rights here. So we have a lot of plates in the air and
balls in the air.
plates are spinning, balls are in the air, right? Okay. Is that how it goes?
That's it.
I don't know. We're so busy we can't keep up. So we encourage everybody to get involved. And it's easy. If you get involved with Health Freedom Alabama, we make it a cinch for you to take action.
And how do we do that again?
Go to www.healthfreedomalabama.com.
Healthfreedomalabama.com.
All right. Well, folks, listen, I can't say enough good things about Stephanie Dernan. I mean, she is a grassroots organizer par excellence. And I think that, you know, we should be, you know, thankful that we've got someone like Stephanie and her co-director, Casey, working to help us move in the right direction for issues that affect us every day when it comes to health freedom. So thank you so much there, Stephanie.
Well,
appreciate
thank
it.
You, Dr. Lou, for helping us shine light on all this.
I try to.
Thank you.
You know, I just hate to get on thin ice on some of these other issues. All right. So I want to shift real quick here for one more issue pertaining to what's going on in the session. And I know that Commander Cox has an interest in this because he's got children in the school system, as does, you know, Stephanie, but not necessarily in the school system now, because I know that Deke has taken his kids out of public school. But the implications of the Price Act, which is a parental rights act that has been supported by various groups, that sounds, you know, it sounds good, but there are some hidden problems that we wanted to try to get a discussion of. So, Deke, you still there?
Yep. So part of the challenge is that the Price Act, you know, was kind of introduced, rolled out by, you know, Eagle Forum, Becky Garrison with, you know, Alabama Eagle Forum, you know, did a, you know, pretty good video on it a couple weeks ago, and it was making the rounds. And you know, what kind of stood out is that at first blush, and even a second or third listening, it sounds like it's, you know, it's giving parents everything that we've been asking for and clamoring for, and Common Sense Campaign and the conservative movement and others, you know, just to have more ownership and options in educating our children in the best possible way as we see fit as parents. And so a lot of that is tied up with a movement that actually started in Sweden 20 plus years ago, and it was the concept that money follows the child, right, Dr. Lou? And so, you know, that quickly found sponsorship here in the States, and has been, you know, kind of reincarnated in different iterations, both at the federal and the state level. And here in Alabama, what we have to be concerned about is that you know, this Price Act that is being proposed or will be proposed soon and introduced in the House is not everything that it's cut out to be. And basically what they do is they try and draw us in and promise us many things like school vouchers and choice, you know, like you can pick your school, you can get a voucher, and they do it through a thing called an ESA or an education subscribers account, which may sound very familiar to those of us who have looked at those over the years through the U.S. federal tax code and perhaps even invested in those you know, other education options as provided through the IRS. But the challenge with this is that what they're trying to fold into the Price Act is, you know, taking money, it's about $6,500 per child, and, you know, the parent can put that into an ESA, and then if the money follows the child, if you don't use all of the money, it can, you know, that it doesn't expire, roll that over into another year or another form of education. Again, as you go down the list of all that is, you know, mentioned in the Price Act, you know, it's extremely appealing when you look at it at first blush. But what they catch us with, and if anyone has time to go over to the New American online, the online presence for the New American magazine, Alex Newman, who is the senior editor there at the New American, you know, has a good, you know, short video. It's about 20-25 minutes to educate people on the hazards of this kind of approach where, you know, buying into, you know, the ESA model and the money following the child. And what they basically do, and this is the crux of it, Dr. Liu, is that they draw you in and they try and build mass support. And then once you pass this bill, within sometimes weeks or just a few months, and this just happened in Arizona, it's also happened, I think, in Michigan, a couple other places within the states, where they then come after private schools and homeschoolers saying, well, you took federal money, and therefore you have to follow the state education guidance. You know, which means that, you know, for whatever you thought you were getting, you know, your school has now been compromised and their curriculum has been compromised. And this extends to, you know, everything from leftist ideology and brainwashing, things like critical race theory and transgenderism, right. You know, being inserted into curriculum, as well as, you know, removing the right for instance, a Christian school to be able to even, you know, read the Bible or maintain prayer. You know, it's absurd if you look at what actually happens when the state gets involved after something like the Price Act is passed. And so, again, Alex Newman over at the New American tells the story better than I do, and in greater detail. This is something that parents in Alabama and in our area definitely need to be on point.
Can you do me a favor, Deke? You sent that to me, but for some reason, it's not in my text messages. Can you resend that so that I can get that out to the rest of the state and to Common Sense Campaign, too? Because I think we really have been kind of had the wool pulled over our eyes up until now in terms of the unintended consequence. Or maybe they are intended. And the reality is that in 2015, the state of Alabama tried to do exactly this in terms of controlling private schools and homeschooling. And it fell apart because people said absolutely no to the State Department of Education, and it was squashed. But here you have, you know, state educrats who are determined to have a woke agenda implemented. And the reality is, whether it's Common Core or whether the woke agenda with transgenderism and all the rest of it, we have absolutely no power to stop it. And the reality, once again, is, and it's a harsh reality, is that despite what we could possibly do and what has happened with the Numeracy Act, in theory, the Numeracy Act says no Common Core. Yet, look where we are with Common Core math. It's there. And the answer that we got about this from you know, Nick Moore, the governor's education so-called guru. Well, you know, Alabama teachers changed the wording, and that means it's an Alabama, you know, it's an Alabama math program. And, you know, you do the analysis. And we did this. On the left side, Common Core. On the right side, 2019 math. And whatever changes they made are minimal. It is just a high BS factor to claim that we do not have Common Core math. And yet, it doesn't matter. And the same thing is going to happen when we actually get to change the standards that are being implemented right now in the counseling program, which is the American School Counselors Association standards, are all being implemented and as we speak. And the question there is that is extremely woke, and it's deliberate, and it's going on from K through 12. And the latest iteration of that is just looking at the stupid books for K through 3 that the school board just passed. And
well, Lou, I want to just also offer something here, because I know Lori's going to give us the hook here in just a minute.
I've got 15 minutes. You know,
yeah,
or so.
Here's the thing.
12.
Federal money, anytime federal money is tied to education, and this is a lesson that we have learned time and time again, and here in Alabama, we have to be exceptionally wary of Governor Ivey and, you know, all the folks up in Montgomery, is that they love federal money. And the second that you sign up for federal money in your child's education, you know, account, the ESA, you know, you're basically signing over, eventually, you know, your right, you know,
to control it. Yeah.
To maintain the integrity of your child's education.
Right.
And so I want to also be clear with folks that, you know, that, and you know, hey, you know me, I'm not shy about naming names, right? But Becky Gerritsen, we need to be equally wary, because as Stephanie Dernan with Health Freedom can attest, you know, she actually, you know, cannot be trusted, you know, because she also came out against us when we were trying to make a stand against vaccine mandates with the legislature. And got in bed, you know, Becky Gerritsen got in bed with, you know, Bisa Gay, the medical lobby, and we could not believe the things that she was trying to work behind the scenes, you know, to basically usurp, you know, our individual rights over body autonomy and, you know, to get out from under the tyranny of the vaccine mandate. You know, that, as you know, that was very, very close to, you know, to my heart, because I was out of work because of that. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and it's unbelievable that these same people are now coming back dressed in, you know, more wolves dressed in sheep's clothing. You know, you also need to watch out for Terry Lathan, who has over in Mobile County and has stood up Rome, which is a Republican establishment effort to try and get this Price Act, you know, through the legislature. And so, again, be wary of anything that you see from Becky Gerritsen or Terry Lathan on this.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and there's no question about both of those individuals, you know, having a checkered past when it comes to, you know, protecting certain rights. I get that for sure. So, all right, Deke, well, I'm glad we've had the discussion about the Price Act, and I think that, like I said, I will try to get this information out as quickly as I can. So if you can resend me the Alex Newman video, I will get that out this afternoon, okay?
Okay, will do. Thanks,
all right,
Dr. Luke.
So let's kind of shift here in the last 10 minutes or 11 minutes, depending upon how nice Lori wants to be to me today. What is your sense of the importance of Ukraine from the Chinese standpoint, and looking at an analysis of how the West has supported Ukraine, and how that might impact how China, if it so decides to, you know, do something about Taiwan, which certainly is, you know, high on Xi's list. What's your sense of that, and what are some of the lessons that your group has been following in terms of how the Chinese might react to, you know, the lessons that they're seeing, the Russians deal with and how that applies to what they would be, you know, having to contend with if they should decide to go against Taiwan, take Taiwan, and assuming that the United States would live up to what Biden has said at least three or four times, even though it's technically not policy, that we will support Taiwan. What's your sense of that?
Well, my sense on that, Dr. Liu, is that, you know, people need to continue to wake up and understand that, you know, Xi Jinping and the Communist Chinese goal extends far, far, far beyond Taiwan.
Yeah, exactly.
And they continue to increase and expand their subversion, often right out in the open, you know, corrupt governments, to corrupt, you know, heads of state that currently focus heavily on corrupting and buying out the vote or installing, you know, CCP-directed strongmen and throughout Oceania and the South Pacific, you know, Solomon Islands. They've attempted to do it in the Marshalls, you know. Make no mistake, you know, Xi Jinping has his eye far beyond Taiwan, you know, to include, you know, the Ryukyu Islands, you know, of Japan, Okinawa, you know, southern prefecture of Japan, Guam, Hawaii. These are all on the table for Xi Jinping and in China's, you know, resurgent century. And so, you know, it's far, far beyond Taiwan. But to answer your question precisely about Taiwan, the lessons that Xi Jinping is learning in Ukraine is that, you know, that basically it's proving the weakness of the current administration. You know, there are a couple of agendas that are playing out in the Ukraine, one of which is, you know, we continue to just dump, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars into the Ukraine. And, you know, what's so crazy about that is just that, you know, it's in response to, you know, an authoritarian action, you know, by Vladimir Putin. You know, so it makes sense on the surface of it, but, you know, what's really going on is the intentional fleecing of the U.S. Treasury at the same time that, you know, nations are switching away from the U.S. dollar and the petrodollar, you know, and pegging their current currencies. And, you know, what they're doing is they've actually set us up, and, you know, and part of it is certainly China, you know, convincing nations, buying out governments to shift to the yuan for trade, you know, to settle their trades in yuan, but then also, you know, to continue just bankrupting the United States of America. And, you know, we are going to reach a point where, you know, that cannot be sustained. There will, you know, there will come a day of reckoning where, you know, financially none of that can be supported. The dollar may well be put on the ropes, on the verge of collapse, and I believe, as we, you and I have talked about before, that is the entree for the Fed and government worldwide to begin, you know, increasing or enhancing the presence of the central bank digital currencies, and that right there is full slavery. You know, that any time that we give ownership of our currency to, you know, digital control and within the government control, you know, then your days are numbered. You know, you will be living under a social credit system similar to what China is running, and you know, if you don't like that, then the response from the government will be the same as it is in China today, which is, if you were jaywalking or reading a book, you know, from a Japanese author or something that they didn't like, or you gave a thumbs up to a tweet from Donald Trump or something, you know, something like that, well, you know, they just subtract points from your social credit score, you know, and maybe you get a fine and they take it directly out of your bank without you even knowing about it. So,
right.
That's a long answer to talk about, you know, what all this is tied to. But, you know, when we also look at some of the other big moving, you know, parts around the U.S. military, you know, it was no accident that they force vaccinated the U.S. military one day after, you know, the president, you know, basically gave approval to emergency use authorization. You know, the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, you know, in August of 21, you know, immediately mandated mass vaccination throughout the U.S. military, and, you know, and then, of course, has covered up or hidden or just stopped reporting data on vaccine deaths and injury within the military. But the other deeply chilling result of that is that they have it is absolutely just gutted our recruiting efforts for the all-volunteer force. And if you're Xi Jinping looking at Taiwan, you know, all that does is play right into your hands, because Lou, as you know from your time in service, you get into an 18 to 24 month window of poor recruitment, and it begins to really have a detrimental effect across readiness of the entire force. And that goes from recruiting, playing in, you know, falling numbers in recruiting. You can't even maintain full brigades. You know, you can't maintain full air wings. You can't man ships or submarines and key billets. And it has an unbelievably corrosive effect on military readiness. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the fact, you know, as Naomi Wolf and others over at Daily Clout have reported, you know, there is no mistake when you look at the numbers that the United States and Western Europe were uniquely targeted in these vaccine mandates, and that we disproportionately share the highest rate by far in the whole world of vaccine deaths and vaccine injury. And again, when you look down the road, if you're Xi Jinping licking your chops over Taiwan, you know, it's the clock's ticking, and it's not in our favor. And, you know, if you look at everything from our shipbuilding program being in a very difficult place to falling recruitment and unlikely to recover short of a national draft, you know, it's right. We're walking towards disaster.
Let me ask you one last thing here. We've got 3 minutes, I think. Lori is she's saying me too. I might have to buy an extra minute. All right, so what we can do is, next time we have the show, we'll follow up on this and just take a deeper dive into some of these issues that are out there with this, because I think that, you know, the whole question of what's happening with Ukraine, I mean, the question about deterrence does come into play, and I think that if we are going to deter China, then it does in part hinge on whether or not we can deter Putin from just gobbling up Ukraine. Now, I've said this on the show before, and I believe it. I think that has to be done, but it doesn't mean that we have to go to nuclear war for it. That's where I draw the line with this. And so I think that there are issues that should be discussed so that real deterrence can be an effective part of our strategy, which it isn't. And as long as Biden is not willing to unleash American energy to hurt Russian oil revenue, then we're just kind of whistling in the dark. So, but let's kind of hold that off to the next one before Lori cuts me off completely.
Well, I think many of us have been waiting for you to address the indictment of President Trump. So I wanted to give you at least a minute to express your thoughts on how that will be addressed next.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You've got, I think Fareed Zakaria, who is certainly no conservative, basically said that the level of this crime, so-called quote-unquote crime, does not reach the level that would require an indictment and a, you know, judicial proceedings. And I think he's right about that. So the question becomes, what is a serious level, you know, that would justify, you know, some sort of an indictment, okay? We can speculate on that. We'll know tomorrow afternoon what this indictment says. The New York Slimes did have an article in their Sunday paper which talked about how Bragg, who, you know, ran against Trump to get elected and then decided not to pursue this whole case, which had been floating around with Cyrus Vance, his predecessor. So the point here is, what changed his mind? okay? And the simple answer is politics, okay?
And you'll
get
into
the left-wing base in New York wanted this to happen. Bragg became the engineer for that to take place. So we have to see what the indictment says, and then we'll go from there. So that our next Monday show will kind of take up with Deke again, I would argue, you know, the whole question about what's going on with Ukraine, China, deterrence, blah, 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 and what we'll know a little bit more about this.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
I want to thank both of our guests, Stephanie Dernan from Health Freedom.
Thank you, Dr. Lou.
Glad to have you today.
Absolutely.
And Deke, you're out there in the Texas wasteland drilling that oil. Keep it coming, Bubba, I'll tell you.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Lou. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Lori.
All right,
okay.
We'll see you. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, we're wrapping it up. Gosh, have a great week, and stand by for more information next week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash, and also by an anonymous donor. If you missed part of this program or want to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. This is WABF, Mobile, Fairhope. Great music and memories now resuming regular programming.